We've been talking about church growth, and we've pretty well established why it is that church growth is necessary, and we've talked about different reasons and that sort of thing, but this evening I want us to start thinking about it in a different kind of way, and we're going to start talking about some more specific things, and you'll see what I mean here in a moment. But we've also talked about how in the church, there are people, there are different kinds of people with different backgrounds, with different cultures and different perspectives. But we also need to realize that that is the truth in regards to the people who we are reaching out to. When it comes to teaching others about God, there's not really a one-size-fits-all study or in other words, it's not all the same to different people. And in our minds, this should emphasize the necessity of study and preparation. But what we're going to be talking about and looking at is really meeting people where they are. And in a simple way, that's talking about adapting your approach. Now, please don't misunderstand what I am intending through this study. I do believe that if you are a Christian by a biblical definition, then you do know enough to share the love of Jesus or to share Jesus with somebody, with whoever, whenever, at any time. I'm not saying that in any way, shape, or form that anyone who is a Christian is inadequate to do so, but we're going to be spending a couple of weeks discussing different ways and different strategies as to how we can make ourselves better or some things that we need to think about when we're trying to share Jesus with others. Because we certainly see in the New Testament that not every sermon was the same and not every group of people were addressed in the same way. So, just like anything else, studying with people and sharing God with others, it's something that we work at. It's something that we progress in, and over time we get better at doing it and we grow in that way. And this is a part of that growth, and we're going to look at different ways that we can do that. But what we're going to be looking at over the next couple weeks specifically is Paul's address to the Athenians. When he's on his missionary journey, he goes to Athens and he preaches to them, and actually we're not going to get to that sermon this evening, but we're going to look at some things prior to that, or some things that are said prior to that, and we'll get to the sermon eventually. But we are going to look at a number of principles and strategies that Paul used when addressing these people, and some things that may have changed his sermon in order to be more effective. The objective is not to win the argument, but it's to win the soul. And we need to try to do that to the best of our abilities in any way that we can, and to grow in any way that we can. But meeting others where they are enhances our effectiveness. Meeting people where they are, and we're going to be talking about that this evening. We're going to look at how Paul analyzed his audience. Some different things that he observed as he was approaching Athens and upon entering the city, and we're going to look at things in that of that nature. In Acts chapter 17, beginning in verse 16, it says, "Now while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he saw that city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogues with the Jews and the devout persons, and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be there. Some of the Epicureans and the Stoic philosophers also conversed with him." First, we see that Paul took notice of the city that he went into. He took notice of Athens. And when we look at Athens, it's a very unique city, to say the least. But it's located in the southern part of Greece next to some other congregations that we know of that are established that had different New Testament letters written to them. But if you can remember back to our study in Philippians, for those of you who were at Wednesday night class, we talked about how Greece is separated into two sections. Primarily, you have the region of Macedonia in Greece, which is in the northern part, and then you have Achaia, which is where Athens is located. And we see this city and its uniqueness, but he observes some things about this city. Athens was a unique place. It was a very intellectual place. It was somewhere where that a lot of Greek philosophers, a lot of famous Greek philosophers originated. Philosophers such as Socrates and Aristotle and other ones that we may be familiar with. A part of analyzing our audience is analyzing the city in which we're in. Now, we're not all accustomed to traveling around like Paul did. We're not going from city to city, hopping around and going to different places in that way. But we still need to know, to the best of our abilities, the people who are around us and enough about the city so that we know and learn about the people in our communities and who are around us in that way. But Paul makes a significant observation about the city. They are full of idols. We can make several observations from having that kind of information. These are different observations that we need to make in order to teach people in a way that's going to be effective. When you think about idolatry, what are some observations we can make about idolatry? Well, we know in the bigger picture of idolatry, there are some sins that are really we can relate to idolatry. A lot of times when we're looking at idolatrous people and that kind of culture, we look at different sins that really a lot of times are associated with idolatry, such as sexual immorality, something that was used as a part of their worship. We look at different forms of debauchery that were used to enhance their worship to their particular idol. There are different sins that could ultimately affect the way we approach a certain kind of people or an idolatrous people. The next observation that we can make is something that Paul is going to actually mention in his sermon. And that is that they are religious people. Now, religious people, that doesn't mean that they're religious in the right way. That doesn't mean that they believe the right things, but they believe in deity in some way, shape, or form. When you approach different cities, even now in North America, there are certain cities that really don't have much to do with religion. And you can tell that by looking up whether or not normally there's some sort of website or resource that you can look at. It will tell you what churches are there or what religions primarily dominate that region or different facts along those lines. Because ultimately, that's going to affect the mindset of the people. And as we learn about our own city, we need to consider those kinds of things. The next observation that we can make is that they're polytheistic. Which means they most likely believe in multiple gods. So if we come in and we bring this idea of having one God, that might be something that's completely foreign to an individual. Now, again, in our city particularly, we're looking at people who are in some way, shape, or form familiar with Christianity. So we may not come across that as often as Paul would have with the Athenians, but that's still something to take into consideration. But in verse 17, we see where Paul typically starts, which is with the Jewish people. It says that he enters the synagogues and he begins to talk with them and some devoted people. Then it says in verse 18 that Paul conversed with some of the Greek philosophers. Now, the Epicureans and the Stoic philosophers were very prominent in that time. They originated in the 3rd and 4th century by different philosophical movements. And There's a lot that we can talk about in relations to them, but Paul is going to take that into consideration when he's preaching this sermon. He wants to address certain things that are on their minds, and that's important to take notice of. There's evidence that there were Stoic philosophers in Tarsus, so probably Paul knew about them to some degree. Paul was from Tarsus, so he was familiar with them. But here is why all of this matters. I know I'm just going through the text and just kind of pointing out different observations that we can make right here in these first couple of verses. But here's why we need to listen, we need to pay attention to these kinds of things. In the church, we use certain terminology. Terminology that you and I would find familiar, or those who have been raised in the church or are familiar with church kind of talk, are familiar with certain kinds of terminology, such as the watery graves of baptism. A lot of you who are in the audience right now, when I say that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But if you go outside and say the watery graves of baptism, people are going to look at you like you are a lunatic. And we use that kind of terminology because that's something that's talked about in the Bible, and that's something that we need to discuss and learn more about. But if other people don't know that about that kind of terminology and they don't understand that language, then am I going to approach somebody with that terminology? Or am I going to have to start somewhere else? We can lose people's interest if we assume that certain knowledge exists when it doesn't. And that happens with all of us. If someone starts talking about something that you have no knowledge of, whether, you know, I've had several conversations with different guys about cars, and there will be a couple of women, whether it be my wife and someone else's wife, and they'll just start rolling their eyes and glazing over because they have no idea what we're talking about. We lose people's interest if we assume that certain knowledge exists when it doesn't. But other ways that we can make this mistake is, in a metaphorical way, building the house before we lay the foundation, so to speak. If Paul opened up to Isaiah, he's up there preaching at the Areopagus and he's talking to a bunch of Gentiles primarily. If he opened up to Isaiah chapter 53 and he started teaching Jesus, how much headway do you think he would have made with these Greek philosophers? Would that have made any sense to them? Or even if they were familiar with it, would that have any credibility with them? Not necessarily. So when we think about this concept of building the house before we lay the foundation, meaning we need to know where it is that we need to start with people. Now, sometimes we don't like taking this route because that means that we have to spend the time to get to know people and asking them questions and learning about them and their background, which may take ultimately more time and energy. But if we want to be successful, then we need to be able to analyze our situation and analyze the people of whom we are talking to or the people that we are addressing, whether it be a group of people or whether it be just one individual. Observing the people we are teaching will also help us to learn what they need. As we're talking to somebody, maybe we can get some sort of indication on what they need as a person. If we learn about their background and we learn that they've had a lot of friends who were inconsistent and who maybe weren't very good to them, then maybe they just need a good friend. And through that kind of knowledge, you can learn that maybe if I'm just a steady person in this individual's life, then I can reach out to them that way and I can build that relationship. Or maybe all they need to do know or maybe all you need to do is teach them about forgiveness. And that'll pique their interest. Maybe they grew up with some sort of religious background where forgiveness wasn't talked about. That it was, you know, some sort of cycle where you do good in this life and maybe in the next life you have to do better. And there are other religious beliefs that don't talk about forgiveness necessarily, but that it's meritorious and all these different ideas that could be influencing them. And if they hear about a forgiving God and one who is graceful, then maybe that will connect with them. Maybe that's something that they can relate to. Because that's what Paul is going to do in this sermon. He's going to talk about subjects that they can relate to. And he's going to do it in a way that is effective and that will pique their interest. We want to do the best that we can not to close ears as soon as they open. Because as we're going to see here in the next few verses, that at least they were willing to listen to Paul. But sometimes if we don't start in a certain area, maybe we're not doing the best that we can to meet them where they are. Meaning we're trying to build the house before it is that we lay the foundation. And everyone needs to start somewhere different. And through analyzing our audience, which we'll talk more about next week, we can accomplish that. But Paul preached this sermon very differently, and he did it for a reason. And he wanted to engage those who he was teaching in an effective kind of way. But we need to see what Paul does next here. Paul took advantage of an unfavorable opportunity. And this is what I mean by that. This is the initial response that Paul gets. In chapter 18 and verse 18, it says, "What does this babbler wish to say?" Meaning Paul has been teaching and he's been going throughout the city and he's been going in the marketplace and teaching different things probably. And that was their initial response. What does this babbler have to say? And when we look at this word specifically, it means to be a seed picker or a scavenger. Meaning that Paul went around and he picked up little pieces of information in different places. And he really didn't know much about anything, but he was this scavenger that wanted to pretend like he knew what he was talking about. And that's what these philosophers and these Greeks are saying about Paul. And they say, "What does this babbler wish to say?" But continuing on in verse 18, it says, "Others said, 'He seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities, because he was preaching Jesus in the resurrection.' And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, 'May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting, for you bring some strange things to our ears. We wish to know, therefore, what these things mean.' Now all the Athenians and the foreigners who live there would spend their time in nothing except telling or hearing something new." So in this passage, we learn something about the Greeks, and we're going to talk about that here in a moment. But whether we knew it or not, we analyze people at different times. Most of the time, we refer to these analyses as first impressions. When we think about meeting an individual, we look at them and we observe what they're wearing perhaps, and we observe maybe the initial comments you made to them or that they made to you, and you get this first impression, and based off of that you start to make a judgment on them and you get this idea of what it is that or who it is that they are, and we start to think about those kinds of things. This is where audience analysis can go wrong. There are a lot of things that Paul observed that could have caused him to prejudge them and say that they or say that teaching this group would be a waste of time. And let's talk about a couple of those things. They were a people that were proud about their knowledge. Paul could have said that they are not going to accept that they are wrong, and he could have taken that idea and moved on. Number two, they heard new ideas all the time, it says in the text. Now, when you think about that, think about how they would be listening to Paul, or how that would influence the way that they listen to Paul. If they're listening to people throw out new ideas all the time, and throwing out new concepts and new philosophies, how is it that they're going to be listening to Paul? You know, I heard what you said, Paul, but what is it, or why, what is it that makes you right and these other people wrong? Or what is it that makes you different than all these other philosophers with different ideas that you're now contradicting? That could have gone through Paul's mind, and through his analysis, he could have judged them and said, it's not even worth teaching these people. They're so saturated with these different teachings, I might as well move on and not tell them anything else, because they're not going to listen anyways. Or at least listen in the way that God would want them to listen, with an honest heart and with an open heart. Or, number three, just the fact that Paul was alone. Paul, for the first time in his missionary journeys, was alone. We see that Silas and Timothy were left, and that Paul was waiting for them in Athens. So he could have gone up to these people and saw them and said, you know, this is a pretty big task to teach these people the gospel by myself. He could have said that and basically determined that, you know, it's not even worth trying. Numbers, a lot of times, there's a lot of power in numbers and a lot of influence in numbers. So if all these Greek philosophers are ganging up on me, and it's basically going to shred any amount of influence that I may have had. So why is it that I should even try? We've talked about in our studies in church growth how there may be times where we have to move on, where the study maybe isn't going anywhere like it should, and we need to use our time with good stewardship, and we might need to move on and try something else. But let us not allow our audience, or the analysis of our audience, to prejudge people in a way that's going to cause us to not even want to try in the first place. Because how often do we really do that? We see someone on the road and maybe they're a lot different than we are, and it's clear visually that they're different than we are, and it's clear that they don't want the gospel or want to listen to anything that I have to say. It's clear that I can't have any kind of relationship with them just because of our physical differences, or maybe our age differences, that we don't want to have, or that we're not able to have any kind of influence on them. Analyzing or evaluating the people that we are going to talk to or try to discuss Jesus with should help us. It should be something that we use as a tool, not something as a hindrance to teach the gospel in the first place. This is all information that Paul thought about before he ever got up there to speak. He knew about these people. Now, did he know all of them in an intimate way or in a personal way? No. He may have, during his time there, gotten to know a few people personally and allowed that to build and to increase his influence and credibility, but he observed the kind of people they were and he changed his sermon because of it. He changed the way he approached them. That is how we meet people where they are. Not just focusing on maybe where we want them to be, or maybe where they should be, or all these other different kinds of things that we tend to be tied down by. But if you're thinking about this in your mind, you're probably thinking just like I was as I was preparing for this lesson. This route or this strategy takes a lot of work. This idea of having to meet every person or everyone who I try to tell about God and tell about Jesus, I have to meet them all individually in a different place than maybe I met someone else. Or I have to change the way I approach this person. You know, when you think about it, it's something that's not easy and may be intimidating at a first thought. But we have the rest of our lives to practice. We have the rest of our lives to try to do the best that we can to be the most effective that we can. Church growth isn't about hollering and about just, I guess, doing, saying the same thing over and over again like sometimes we do in different cases. But meeting people where they are will increase our effectiveness. And that's what we need to consider. Are we willing to put the work in to get to know people? Are we willing to put the work in to prepare ourselves for teaching others the gospel? We've looked at that church growth is necessary. We've discussed that. And we've looked at why it's necessary. But now it's time to start thinking about how it is that we're going to put this into practice, like so many of you already have. Think about the people who are around you. How is it that I can adapt to them? Which we're going to talk about more in these following lessons. If you need help in trying to figure all of this out, then please reach out to somebody. Maybe someone who has experience or who has more experience. I constantly learn from other people who have been or have had a lot of experience in evangelism and in talking with different people because they can give me tips on how to do things better. Reach out to different people. If you all have any need whatsoever, if there's anyone here who has need for prayer or who is struggling in their walk as a Christian and in their Christian lives, then please come forward while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement.